Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi, girls. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 22, The Abbey. And now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Just a quick update before we get into this penultimate episode of the season of Season 5. Quick update on what we're doing on Patreon. This Friday, May 15th, it is again with this episode 288. Let's watch Kathleen Robertson in Rookie Blue. Did anyone think Claire would end up doing so many cop shows in her post 90210 life? Maybe not, but we are going to look at one of them. It's season 2, episode 10, Best Laid Plans. It is on the Roku channel. We would love to have you join us for that discussion and the 287 others that we've done. That's againwiththispodcast.com/club. We have a great time. You should definitely come through.
You should. And you should also come through for our upcoming call-in episode, 210-767-2237. We need your voicemails by May 20th so that you can be part of the decision-making process of what show we cover after Dawson's Creek. Could it be Sisters, which we floated at the time we talked about the John Wesley Shipp episode? Could it be Party of Five? Could it be something else we've never even thought of? Could it be something we rejected out of hand a previous time and then have since softened on, perhaps? You tell us. 210-767-2237. And if you did not get that down fast enough, go to againwiththispodcast.com/info or just hit the info tab. Phone number is right there along with a lot of other information. All right, let's get into this episode, starting with why is it called The Abbey, not spelled like a place, like spelled like a person's name?
I don't know.
I don't either. Okay, I thought you might have a guess.
I don't get it. Googled around a little and was like, is that like The Prestige? I don't even know.
Yeah, maybe it's that Alex is the Abby of this season and that she's like crazy and self-destructive. I don't
chaotic
know.
Chaotic evil? I don't know.
Abby
was fun. This is just a drag.
It is. I mean, if you guys know, call and tell us that too, because we were not able to figure it out. All right. Speaking of Alex, let's start with our B plot. Pacey's restaurant era may be drawing to a close. We open this plot line in the kitchen at the restaurant. We've been given to understand it's a fine dining establishment, but it also has just a regular ass toaster on a counter surface out of which someone is taking toast as the scene starts.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what's happening here. I also don't know if people got their cues mixed up because soon Alex stomps in, sarcastically saying to all of the people silently gathered waiting for her that there's no rush, her time isn't valuable at all. And then Pacey walks in behind her. Clip 2.
Morning, everybody.
You're late, and that's a bad start.
I'm 4 minutes late. Do you think I'll be able to catch up? I mean, how much could I possibly have missed?
Okay. When I watched this through the first time, I was furious that he was late. I now understand, obviously, having seen the episode, he's doing a thing, but mm-hmm. I still be earlier than Alex. Be there first, even if you're doing a thing.
Yeah. I mean, all of this is just exhausting. Like, that we have to sit through a full episode of these machinations is very tiring, but
yeah.
Let's keep going so that we can be done.
Alex ignores Pacey and announces that they're going to be closed the next afternoon for a special meal for investors who, on the basis of this experience, will be deciding whether to open a second Civilization in Philadelphia. It has to go well, and all of their jobs are on the line, which to me would suggest you should have started planning for this with trial runs, like maybe as soon as Alex got there. But I guess I'm the stupid asshole because Alex is only now, the day before, even floating ideas for the menu to the whole staff who obviously don't have any input.
And who she can't fire because she has no margin for error in terms of getting this done.
Yep.
Unless she's going to cook, which in this economy?
No. Here's what Alex says. Clip 3.
I want to start with fresh goose liver pate.
Well, that's going to be a bit of a problem.
Why is that?
Because the geese necessary to make that particular pate flew south to the Bahamas for the winter about 6 months ago and won't be back till June. However, if you would like me to go down there and get them for you, I'd be more than happy to.
Okay, what do you suggest?
Me? Well, I'm not the professional here, am I?
Good point.
Yeah, it is a good point. So why does he have this fucking job? Like, who else's ideas are you looking for if not your executive chef?
Yeah. Also, it's goose liver, not slipper. Give a Twin Peaks grad another take, please.
Well,
and this is not how pate or geese work.
There's more. Clip 4.
Of course, the bluefin tuna was looking especially choice at the fish market yesterday, so we could potentially start off with a nice spicy sashimi, which would go a long way to complement the asparagus dip and arugula salad, which just happens to be Trevor's masterpiece and is a wonderful prologue to the rack of lamb, drizzled with a little plum sauce. Maybe you serve it over a bed of polenta, finish off the whole night with lemon souffle, maybe some homemade vanilla ice cream, and you're off to the races. Of course, that's just one idea. We could always go another way if you'd prefer.
This sounds disgusting. All of it. And I like seafood. I'm like the only one on this panel who cares. But like, okay, you're on the Cape, LOL. Blue fish. Okay. Whatever looked good yesterday is not pertinent here. If it's a lot of investors and you're not actually a sushi or fusion restaurant, maybe go a different way.
Yeah.
What's with the plum sauce on polenta?
Ugh. Gross.
I mean, what do I know? Like, cold pizza is my idea of haute cuisine, but this all just sounds really sketchy and what you'd get if you put a 19-year-old who has watched a bunch of old school A&E in charge, and that's who is in charge.
Right. And who, the last time he had to make a whole menu by himself, it was bad.
I mean,
it was months ago, but still.
Yeah.
Alex tersely asks Pacey to speak in private, and he rolls his eyes as he exits. And then in her office, there's this, clip 5.
I want you to listen and listen closely. If you're going to behave like a toddler whenever you're around me, and you're going to insist on testing my limits, you'd better be prepared to reap the whirlwind, because we will tangle ass and you will lose. And in the process, I will make your life so extraordinarily unpleasant that you will rue the day that God created woman. Now, that's just one idea. We could go another way if you prefer.
At least get her in to do ADR so we're not hearing whirlwind in place of whirlwind and rue the day, not woo.
Yeah. And what, tangle ass? Never heard that before. And also, bitch, you have no leverage.
No, you don't.
Can you even boil an egg? Then shut the fuck up, pick a menu, and cross your fingers that they go for it. You chose this.
You did. Yeah, tangle ass is weird under any circumstance, but especially if she's trying to diffuse the sexual tension, because they are spending this whole monologue standing so close together. I really thought the other way was going to be with them like furiously making out in her office. All right. Glad it wasn't just me. So.
Yeah. No, it definitely wasn't. I think the show couldn't decide what was supposed to happen with her. And then they were like, oh, we're going to do, well, we'll see.
Anyway, she stomps out and Pacey smirks. And the next day, Alex is in the kitchen being a huge bitch to everyone in the last minutes before her big investor's lunch. She takes forever to imply that Marie sneezed on the silverware and then fires her for it, which is pretty rich given that Alex is just hanging out in the kitchen with her hair down and uncovered. Pacey pulls Alex aside to say she can't fire Marie. This is one of three jobs Marie's holding down while raising a child alone, but Alex is unmoved, and Pacey just apologetically squeezes Marie on the shoulder as he walks by. And the fact that he's not immediately using the leverage of the time crunch to threaten to quit and protest like the Pacey of any other season should tip us all to the fact that something is up here. And
also, it just is like, you don't have to make her a sort of sob story. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody needs that job or they wouldn't be putting up with restaurant life. Mm-hmm. The point, again, is that if the lunch is like imminent, like people are gathering outside, you don't get to yell at people for not having watched the Forks episode of The Bear. You just clean them yourself and get going.
Yeah.
So dumb.
It is. And it gets dumber. When the investors are seated for their luncheon and Alex announces the first course of tuna sashimi, no one responds, nor do they when she snaps her fingers or when she claps her hands. So she storms into the kitchen, yelling in a way that would be quite audible to her guests, even if it wasn't an open kitchen design, but it is. Trevor tells her that Pacey took all the food they prepared to a shelter for the unhoused, and then Marie sneezes on a utensil and drops it in the bin. Alex is trying to hold it together when Pacey enters, making a charm school joke at Alex's expense, which is the second one this season after the t-shirt, which you can get it through methods.com. Pacey is carrying a stack of pizza boxes that he drops on the floor before this, clip six.
What is going on here?
You, sir, are witnessing a coup d'etat. It is my unfortunate duty as duly designated representative of the staff of civilization to inform you that in hiring Miss Alexandra Pearl as the manager of this restaurant, you have made a grievous error in judgment. In her short time here, she has demonstrated not only complete incompetence, but an...
Shut up. Right now. Stop.
Oh, I'm not finished yet. Not only complete incompetence, but an utter disrespect for all of her employees. She is manipulative, vindictive, and cruel, and she has created an environment so hostile and unpleasant that we feel it is impossible for us to serve today's meal at a level representative of our abilities.
So, no lunch?
No, under five, because those pizza boxes are evidently empty, and he's just flinging them around like there's nothing in them.
It's true. And also, like, then he does pick up the boxes and start passing them out. That's when we can tell they are empty. But even so, like, you know, it's still a restaurant. Don't serve floor pizza. Not trying to be fancy, but just saying.
Yeah, come on.
So Pacey says he got enough pizza for everyone. And Alex tries to save face. Clip seven.
Everyone, Pacey Witter is a deeply disturbed and highly delusional young man who has become increasingly obsessed with me.
That is a good move. Very clever.
It's okay, Pacey. This is clearly the result of some sort of a breakdown.
Even if that were true, I don't know why she would think not only keeping him on, but promoting him to the top job did not just prove Pacey's claim that she's incompetent as a manager.
Mm-hmm. And also, honestly, investors don't give a shit how dysfunctional the kitchen is if you have butts in the seats. Mm-hmm. And apparently, before Danny left and had his quarter life crisis or third life crisis, they did. Why would you change anything? Just make Pacey the interim chef until you could find somebody to take over.
Right. Alex adds that Pacey's a lunatic and that she has the full respect and support of her staff. And Trevor's like, no, we hate you also. So she's forced into trying this. Clip eight.
Pacey, you're fired.
Yeah. Reap the whirlwind, babe.
Get all the words right. Mm-hmm. So he wanders out, trailed by the rest of the staff, splitting up the last pizza. And apparently it takes Alex hours to put her shit in a bag and change from her heels into sneakers because it's dark out when she emerges from the restaurant to see Pacey leaning against his Mustang waiting for her. She thought his reap the whirlwind crack was a good button on their time together and doesn't know why he would step on it, but he's not there to gloat. Clip nine.
I came back because sometimes I let things go and I just end up wondering about them. And it occurred to me that if I let this go, I will probably end up wondering about it for the rest of my life.
What do you want to know?
I want to know what happened to you, Alex. Because I gotta believe that people aren't born mean.
Who cares? Who cares?
She was absolutely right. That was a good kiss-off line. Don't step on it by being savior complexy.
Ugh. Yeah, this is her third and final episode. There's no need to try to redeem her at all.
Mm-mm. No.
And if doing so was a network note, these writers, two people wrote this one, Diego Gutierrez and Jonathan Kasdan, agree with me and don't bother. Alex dubiously asks if Pacey's going to save her. And when he says he's just curious, Alex says she believes that in the end, people get exactly what they asked for. Pacey proved that today. I don't even know what that is referring to. Like, unless she means she asked for his fuck over, I guess.
Yeah. Why the drive-by from her about his savior complex? Like, it's one thing for me to do it. She just got here.
Yeah.
And the thing is, she's probably right. Like,
yes.
And maybe he's not going to save her, but he would want to. That's what he does.
It's true. So when he gets into his car, it suddenly won't start. And he's still struggling when Alex drives up next to him in her Porsche and offers him a ride. Since she knows he doesn't have a cell phone, this is the first time we've heard that. LOL, of course he doesn't have a cell phone in 2002. Like,
yeah,
of course.
Well, chefs.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Pacey tries to turn her down, but eventually gives in. And the camera lingers so long on Pacey closing his car door without locking it that I thought it was about to be a plot point, but it doesn't come up again in this episode. So just weird directing, I guess. Mm-hmm. When we return to them in the car, Pacey stupidly asks what Alex is going to do next. And since she's already speeding, it seems like the answer might be drive us both off a bridge, which makes this bad small talk for Pacey, which Alex confirms when she says she's going to get up in the morning, look for another job, probably not in food service, since quotes like complete incompetence will follow her around the industry. And she rants about getting a job as a fry girl, gaining a bunch of weight from onion ring batter, having to be removed from her home with a crane, and then being unhoused, but covered in cats. None of it is funny. It's around this point that Pacey notices the speedometer and asks her to slow down, which she doesn't, darting in and out of traffic. And only then does Pacey put on his seatbelt, which, like, where was the WB standards and practices on that one?
Seriously.
Alex's life as she knows it is over, she says, but she feels liberated and terrified and like she's never felt more alive in her life. And one commercial break later, she's still speeding and Pacey is still very worried. Alex remembers what her uncle Mort used to say. You never know what you're capable of until you're ready to push the limits, like with this car. Can it make a sharp turn at 70 miles per hour? They should find out. And they scream around a corner and clip 10.
Okay, now I'm begging you, please.
Come on, Pacey. You know what? I'm a little disappointed in you. I mean, I really thought you were untouchable. I thought you were shockproof.
You thought I was shockproof? Well, maybe you're right. I mean, why am I getting so upset? I just got fired. I lost my girlfriend. I have no place to live. Maybe you're onto something here. I mean, because if you think about it, my life is actually over too. So why don't we do this? I mean, why don't we actually just go ahead and push this as far as we can? See how far we're willing to go. Because 80 miles an hour, really, what's that? I mean, 80 miles an hour, that's what my grandmother drives on the way home from the gynecologist. So I want you to drive this car. I want you to drive it like you know where you're going. You know what I mean? I mean, really, drive it like you got some place to go. Like you know where you're going. Because, God, there's something about a fast car and a beautiful woman that does it for me in all kinds of ways.
Oh my God. Interminable. Like, this just goes on way too long. Nobody cares about this character.
And I don't understand what his end game is either. Because as he seems to get more excited about possibly smashing into a wall, Alex visibly loses her nerve and he starts getting into her space, asking to kiss her neck and then blocking her view so she almost T-bones a minivan right in front of her. And like, what if she hadn't missed it? Like, what was his plan? I don't understand what he was trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I don't either.
Anyway, it breaks the spell. Alex stomps on the brakes and they do a 180 spin before the car stops. He gets out. And if I'm him, what I'm not doing is walking in front of the car while she's still at the wheel. But he does. Opens her door as he passes and she gets out, obviously in a daze. When we come back to them, she's sitting next to Pacey on the curb, tears streaming down her face as she gasps that she really could have killed whoever was in that van and them. She doesn't say, but she could have.
Mm-hmm.
She says that Pacey saved her life. Clip 11.
So what's it worth, Day, Alex?
I'm not capable of answering your question because I honestly don't know why I am the way I am. I mean, do you know why you're so good?
The only thing I know, Alex, is that
You can't go through your entire life feeling sorry for yourself. No matter what's happened to you.
I believe that.
And also that it's never too late.
For what?
To try and make things right.
You know what the saddest part is?
Yeah, you totally messed up your Porsche.
Nah, it's a rental.
So what's the saddest thing?
I really do like you.
Okay. What's the point of any of this? God.
Jesus. Well, I'm glad this last minute first thought character and her suicidal ideation got wrapped up in this plinky moment with Pacey, savior of all women.
Yeah, but we're not going to get to see her explore how much she likes Pacey, because that's a series wrap on Sherry Lynn Fenn. Goodbye. It was a weird time we had with
yeah.
you.
Okay, good luck.
On to the A-plot, the college kids revive some old drama. We open in Joey and Audrey's dorm where a floor-wide water fight is underway. Audrey makes it into their room but doesn't close the door behind her, so the two guys that are chasing her with water guns end up soaking Joey while she packs for her return to Capeside for the summer. Clip 12.
Can you just stop and try to appreciate the end of the year all-day rager that you're missing happening live right here in your dorm?
Missing mm-hmm. is what you heard.
Also, why does everyone think this is so awesome? There's computers in the line of fire. I'd be fucking furious and would call the cops. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. After a reminder that Audrey's currently single, we find out she has been bugging Joey to come to LA with her for the summer, which Joey declines again. So then could Audrey come to Capeside instead just for a few days? Joey agrees, but says it means she also has to be packed in time to get a lift with Dawson. And then there's a knock. Each girl grabs a water balloon and Audrey opens it and they throw the balloons at Wilder. And
meanwhile, in the background of the shot, there's two girls just making out.
I totally missed it until you flagged it.
Yeah, like making out, like yes. arms around each other's waists. He's standing there dripping and it's like, can we just have the episode about these?
Mm-hmm.
What's up with the Worthington Sexual Awakening Club back there? Because yeah. I'm really not interested in Joey's and want to know more about it.
Seriously. Well, minus the part where two girls are making out, this is a full retread of the Friends episode, the one with Joey's fridge, which aired more than 2 years before this did. In that one, Ross was dating a student and got in the crossfire of her dorm water fight. So I guess TV just decided this is something that happens in dorms.
Mm. I guess.
Joey and Audrey are only a little embarrassed. Honestly, Wilder should be the most embarrassed about not just popping by a student's room unannounced, but accepting her invitation into said room after Audrey has left them alone. Guy, learn something ever. I'm begging. Please. So after the credits, Joey's bringing Wilder a towel. He came to give her an advance copy of the Worthington Literary Review, in which he has placed her boring short story from the season 5 premiere about kissing Dawson in the season 4 finale. When we see the page, oh God, it's 7 pages long. Her story's 7 pages. No!
Was each individual lip cell profiled?
Who cares? But this is also where we have to tell Dawson's Creek, like we told the miniature wife on our sister podcast, Extra Extra Hot Great in April. Magazines, even ones like this, do not just publish pieces by writers they've had no contact with. Editing is a process. The author has to be involved, but whatever, I guess.
Also, it was bad.
It was bad. He gave her a C.
Whatever compromise you have on the editor of this fine publication must be really felonious because no.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Joey the Rube has no questions about how this has happened. Clip 13.
This is amazing. Thank you.
Thank yourself, Joey Potter. Any more chapters to that story?
Well, life twisted and turned unexpectedly. He went his way. I went mine. And now... if only the rules of writing applied to life, right?
Spoken like a published author.
And no, the Ohio really came out.
Yeah.
They are both irritating. Ugh. When he gets up to leave, Joey asks about his summer plans. He is going to try writing again, and Joey says, good for you, like he's her precocious nephew or something, but they go on. Clip 14.
What about you?
Are you embarking on the epic freshman summer adventure?
I don't know if you can call going back to Cape Side an adventure.
Well, at least it's beautiful in the summer, right?
Yeah, it just feels like this year was such a great step forward, and going back feels kind of like two steps back.
It's also going to take you fucking 6 hours to get there from Boston because it's the summer. You know, I know it's beautiful in the summer. It's a vacation community. They would do anything to avoid going back there. Get a job anywhere else. Go to Springfield. Go to Bangor. Go to Europe.
Joey adds that there's something she has to do. Wilder looks forward to hearing about it in the fall, and she dangerously closes the space between them. And clip 15.
Thank you again.
It's me who should say thanks for more than you can possibly imagine.
Oh my God. Dude.
I can't imagine literally anything that she did for you besides not reporting you to your department head. Oh, wait. You were also the department head?
Yeah. Yeah.
Beat it, dude. Beat it.
I'm choosing to believe Ken Marino is doing like a secret comedy take on this.
I hope
like,
so.
Just because, for himself, whoa. Because when he gets to more than you could possibly imagine, he like looks skyward like she's actually a saint who has helped him from above. It's so strange.
Ugh.
Anyway, then they hug, but they manage to get through it without taking it further. And they never will, because that's a series wrap on Ken Marino. Bye.
Thank God.
Over to Viz Arts. Dawson is emptying out his cubby or something when his agent Andrew calls. Oliver, loitering nearby, eavesdrops on Dawson's half of the conversation, from which we can tell Andrew's asking what his and Oliver's plans are for the summer. So when Dawson hangs up, Oliver asks what's up. Dawson curtly resets their storyline from when they went to New York together, since which Dawson and Oliver apparently haven't been speaking, even though Oliver knows Dawson did convince Andrew to represent him, and apparently assumes that Oliver was part of the deal, despite Dawson having made the entire effort to fix what Oliver broke. Anyway, clip 16.
Okay. You're right. I felt really bad the whole train ride home, so I'm sorry. I don't know what it is with me. I just can't handle that type of thing. I'm working on it.
Hey. What are your summer plans?
I was gonna work at Hooks It Video. Why?
You might want to change those plans.
Really?
Yeah, really? If he's working on it, why didn't he apologize to you after he got done feeling bad on the train ride?
Mm-hmm. After Dawson gives him an eyebrow pop and a grin, you can see in the visual aids, one of his hotter moments of the season, I will say.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I would also tell you, dear listener, don't get too attached to this creative partnership, because that's a series wrap on Jordan Bridges 2.
Oh, my God. Everybody overboard.
Yup. Then we go over to a patio at Boston Bay College. Jack and Jen are bickering over where to spend their summer. If Jack is serious about Fiji, which Jen rejects on skin cancer grounds, he better be footing the whole bill, because if I were Jen and my grandmother sold her house to pay for my tuition, I would probably get a summer job and help out.
Yeah.
But Jen also doesn't want to go backpacking through Europe, sleeping on lumpy youth hostel mattresses with nowhere to do laundry. In fact, she doesn't know why they have to have a summer adventure at all. Jack vaguely says that while they should have spent this year moving forward, neither of them did, so this would be that. Jen agrees with him, but she always hated summer camp, and what he's describing sounds like that, but for longer and much further away. But if she has to do it, she doesn't, and she shouldn't. He's the only one she would want to do it with, and he agrees. And then we're back at Worthington. Joey gives Audrey the second last box of their stuff to put in storage. Is this how dorms work? You get to just keep your stuff there between, you don't have to move it all out and then move it back?
No, you got to move it all out.
Okay, that's what I thought. It seems strange, but whatever. Then we have to watch Joey and her tall strip of exposed midriff do a final check for any last items they may have neglected to pack and then look around the empty room with wise wistfulness for 45 seconds and then leave with the actual last box.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
At his house, Dawson is in the shed scraping the hull of a rowboat when Audrey and Joey show up. Audrey demands to see the bedroom that was the site of so much teen romance and angst through Dawson and Joey's formative years, and when she takes off to inspect it like a museum exhibit, Joey asks Dawson to entertain Audrey. While Joey goes to see her dad in prison, she's been wanting to talk to him ever since her mugging. It's episode 22, that was episode 15, so she's taking her time, but whatever, she had finals. Dawson offers to go with her, but Joey needs to do this one alone. And back in Boston, Jen and Jack march into the kitchen to announce to Grams that after hours online at the library, they have planned their big adventure. They're going to Costa Rica. And I refuse to believe they got through this year of school from fall 2001 to spring 2002 without internet access at home. And B, Jen's hair looks really cute. So it's a shame that Grams has to bring her down. Clip 17.
I just got off the phone with Helen and Theodore.
Hmm?
Parents.
Okay, I know you have to tell the new viewers that, but Jack knows who her parents are. Like, figure out another way to get that into dialogue.
Find some way to block the scene so that he, like, had his head in the fridge looking for a snack and didn't hear. Like,
yeah, that would work too.
That was dumb.
Jen's terrible parents have bought a house in East Hampton and want Jen to spend the summer there with them. Back to Joey, who walks up to the guardhouse at the prison asking for Mike, only to be told he was paroled for good behavior 4 months ago. Joey sputters that he can't have been. She's family and they weren't informed. But the guard says it's Mike's choice whether to notify his family or not. And no, there is not a parole officer they can contact. Joey needs to find out where he is and if he's okay, saying Mike is her dad. And the guard takes pity on her. Of course he does. Clip 18.
I know your dad. He seems like a decent guy. I heard he was making a living at the Five and Dime down in Centerville.
That is such a not this, but something like this placeholder line that the two people who co-wrote this episode really should have come back to, because that is so first thought. Although there is a Centerville, Massachusetts. It's in the Barnstable area, I found out.
Yeah, Barnstable County is the Cape. The whole county is the Cape. Centerville does exist and is reasonably near where Capeside theoretically is, even though Capeside is 100% North Carolina.
Right.
Everything about this prison, like the sign looks like a craft project. Mm-hmm. And then the guardhouse is like outside and just looks like the ticket booth at like a water park.
Yeah.
Because right next to it is like, you know, the wheelchair signage for like people using wheelchairs to enter. And it's like, this obviously was like a park. Of some kind. This is not how any of this works. There is no Dahlman Correctional. Like, obviously, you know that, but it's fascinating to me that every now and then they just throw in this little, like the turd is floating along is like the Cape reference that you're like, we just thought this was some magical place. Like, why did you have to make it Cape Cod? You have, you know, one thing about it.
Yeah.
That it's Cape Cod. You know nothing else. Someone found Centerville and was like, okay, well, they got to have one of those, right? It's like Springfield.
Right.
Every state has one. Like, okay, I'm exhausted.
Back in Capeside, speaking of exhausting, Dawson has brought Audrey downtown to tell her a story about a time when he and Pacey, age 13 or so, saw Christy Livingston out after a movie. And even though she was 3 years older than they were, which is not likely, she was still at Capeside when they were sophomores. Pacey declared that someday he was going to kiss her in the rain and nothing would ever be the same again. And Audrey asks if he ever did. And Dawson says, no, he didn't even get close, which I think he did. And Andy caught them and it was a big fight at a dance, if I'm recalling correctly.
I think it was like episode 3 of the entire show. Mm. And he was just like, I'm planting my flag on this. It was like a Lucas moment. And he kissed her and Cliff or whoever was like, all right, fair. And did the like slow hallway clap. Mm. I will check this while we're talking about it. I was just impressed that there was a Christy Livingston reference. But
yeah,
this is like when Brandon Walsh is telling that elaborate story about wiping out and having blood running down his face the first day of school. Like, we saw that.
Yeah,
it never happened. The pilot. That is not what happened.
I'm pretty sure the Christy moment was like she was just breaking up with her boyfriend for like the 12th time or something and at a dance. And he saw her being sad in the hallway and was consoling him. And then Andy saw them and mistook the situation.
Yeah, that could be. All right.
Anyway,
continue. I will investigate.
So we hear this. Clip 19.
Manala didn't kiss her in any kind of weather, but he tried. At the expense of dignity, the expense of reputation and self-respect, he tried.
Why are you telling me this?
Far be it for me to comment on what qualifies as pathetic, but I don't think you have to let go of your silly romantic fantasies, because I'd be willing to bet he hasn't let go of his.
Well, that's just great. Fantastic. Now I'm never going to move on.
I mean, none of us ever will, so join the club.
Yeah.
Get it.
Exactly.
Then Dawson changes the subject. Clip 20.
Didn't you say before about you wish you could be here and you wish I could be in L.A.?
Grass is always greener.
I think I'm going to L.A.
What?
I don't want to say anything because it just happened, but what the hell? This producer wants to work with Oliver and me on our movie to develop into something more. I don't know what that means.
Okay, wait. Do you realize that this is the best news ever? Let's just put aside for a second how totally awesome it is that this producer wants to work with you guys and focus on it entirely in terms of me. I'm not going to have to be alone out there. I'm not going to have to hang out with the people I went to high school with. I'm saved. Thank you.
We might need a place to crash for a little while.
Are you kidding? You're staying with me, obviously. Period. No question about it. I can't believe you didn't tell me this before. Did you tell Joey?
Well, no, he didn't, and we'll come back to that, but I'm going to go ahead and guess the invitation to stay at Audrey's does not extend to Oliver. In fact, he probably shouldn't find out where she lives. Back in Boston, the scene starts with Jen blasting The Who's Bob O'Reilly, Joe Parra style. And if you...
What?
If you don't know what that means, I feel sorry for you, because tragically, the Joe Parra Talks With You episode, Joe Parra Reads You the Church Announcements, is not streaming online, but there is a clip of him hearing the song for the first time. I will put it in the show notes.
I don't understand that choice for Jen, though. Would she go with Hole?
Yes. I assume this part of the scene is not in any streaming service, but Jen climbs onto a chair in the living room and sings along. Clip 21.
Out here in the field.
Okay. Think she would have gone with Hole.
She's a better singer than Katie Holmes, let's say that. And she's not even trying.
Yep.
So when Jack walks in on her, Jen is oblivious till he turns the stereo down, like we heard. And then she gets embarrassed. Whatever she thinks about her parents, she says she falls apart. She's trying not to do that this time. Jack knows and says he's going back to the library to try to cancel their flights to Costa Rica and get their money back. But Jen tells him not to. She hasn't decided if she even wants to go to the Hamptons. Jack says the two of them have all the time in the world to take their trip and that the invitation from her parents has been 5 years coming. So doesn't she have to see it through? But Jen doesn't think her life should start and stop at their convenience, and she needs time to figure out what she wants. Jack nervously asks how much time, and Jen says if he would just let her get back to what she was doing, she could work it through. So he turns the music back up and leaves her to it, and she resumes and, you know, rocks out, etc. At the Potter B&B that night, Joey and Bessie are discussing Mike. Bessie wisely saying he must have had his reasons for not seeing them, like that he's trying to rebuild his life first, and he's not very good at that, so Joey should give him time. Audrey agrees with Bessie that Mike's probably just afraid of hurting them, but Joey worries that he hates her since she was the one who sent him back to prison. So, you know, I would. But Audrey says he's probably ashamed to face her, weirdly adding that Mike knows after last time it's up to Joey whether he's in Joey's life, which it's not. He is intentionally remaining out of touch with her. He's making it his decision.
Mm-hmm.
So Joey belatedly remembers that Audrey has her own personhood and apologizes for ditching her for the day. But Audrey was fine. Dawson's a gem and he would do anything for Joey. And obviously taking him for granted, Joey agrees that he's cool that way. The last time she went to see Mike in prison, Dawson knew she wanted him to be there without her having to ask. Clip 22.
It's a long time ago.
Right. Like anything has changed. I mean, he drove all the way from New York to Florida just to see you like 3 weeks ago, for God's sakes.
He did? What are you talking about?
Ugh! Could my mouth get any bigger?
Well,
I don't buy that. I mean, I buy that they had interaction and the show just failed to update us until it was time for this conflict to rear its boring head again.
Mm-hmm.
But that she didn't know that he was there. Like, he drove all the way there with Oliver. And then Pacey's like, she's in a tent with Charlie. And Dawson's like, well, that's my time, folks. Mm-hmm. And drove home.
Yeah. Well, he stopped at the beach first and looked at the ocean because we saw that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it.
Wow. It's a lot of time to spend in the car with Oliver and not even, like, get a fish witch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, buddy. To hang up the phone, Christy Livingstone wise, when I found her on the Dawson's Creek wiki, it did not say that she had kissed Pacey. So let's assume he did not.
It was from the season 2 premiere and it did whatever it was. Like, it did happen in front of Andy, but he and Andy had just met that day. So,
right.
I miss Andy.
Yeah, agreed. So then Dawson's sitting on his bed with his dirty fucking Skechers on, of course, watching a movie when Joey wanders in. He asks how it went with her dad and she tells him what we know. He is shocked, of course, but thinks it's understandable since the last time Mike got out and returned to Joey's life, it was a disaster. And if Mike loves her, Dawson gets why he wouldn't want to repeat that. Joey agrees and then asks to talk about something else. Audrey said he had something to tell her. And he gives her a huge smile and clip 23.
It's kind of weird just because it's a really good thing. How would he be as excited about it as I am? But I'm not sure that right now is the best time.
No, now it's fine. I want to hear it. Tell me.
Here goes. This producer in LA, this really big producer, saw our movie and he liked it. He loved it, actually. And he wants to fly Oliver and me out to LA this summer to work with him, and he wants to be our mentor. You know, help us get our foot in the door. That's what my agent said. And it could be a colossal waste of time, but I don't think so. And for the first time, I think this is the beginning of everything that I've ever wanted.
That's not what she was here to hear about.
No, which I'm kind of here for. And also kind of here for Dawson actually getting something that he wants and being happy. What a topsy-turvy world season 5 has been.
So the camera stays on Joey's face as she tries to tamp down her disappointment that what Dawson had to tell her is not that he re-loves her. All she can say is that she's shocked. Confusing Dawson since she just said Audrey gave her some kind of advanced preparation. Joey covers by grabbing his hands and blurting that she's so happy for him she can't maintain a complete thought. Happy isn't the right word. She's overwhelmed. Dawson wanted to tell her as soon as he heard since she's the person that he wants to share it with more than anyone in the world. Joey's worried about saying the wrong thing, but Dawson says she already said all the right things. More importantly, Dawson did not say the wrong thing, which would have been, let's get back together. And when we rejoin Jen, she is wrapping up a phone call with her parents while Jack waits worriedly on the couch, well within earshot. She plops down next to him, asking if he knows the feeling where you don't want to cry but can't think what else to do. Clip 24.
I said that I appreciated their invitation this summer, but that I had already made other plans.
What'd they say?
They asked me to reconsider, and I said no, and they sort of sounded relieved. Did I do the right thing?
Look, I love you very much, but I can't tell you that I believe you did the right thing, because I'd be lying, and I won't do that.
Well, then don't.
Okay, how are things with your surviving family members, fucking Jack? Where's your mom at these days? How's your sister?
Yeah.
Shut up!
Did you pass your finals?
Right. I mean, I guess we assume he did, thanks to Eric sneaking the test out for him.
Good job, Eric.
Yeah. I mean, Andy got into Harvard, and we have not seen her all year. Like, did she defer? Where is she, truly?
I guess she did. Is she just still in Italy?
Yeah.
Oh.
Point being, shut up, Jack. You don't talk to your family either.
Yeah, seriously.
So Grams joins them, and they catch her up, Jack asking what Grams thinks. Grams sits next to Jen, commenting that Jen's parents haven't been generous with Jen. In fact, they have been cheap. Clip 25.
I don't think this invitation absolves them of that.
Well, of course not, but I mean...
I wasn't finished.
Sorry.
When I cut the clip, his little sorry like was not even... did not even register on the WAV file. It was so quiet. But yeah, tell him.
Yeah.
Grams thinks Jen's relationship with her parents is more complicated than Grams or Jack could ever know. Maybe unsalvageable, and that only one person on Earth knows what's worthwhile here. If Jen's parents have found a way to love her, this won't be their last opportunity to prove it. And everyone smiles, and it's very cute. And the next day, we join Dawson at the Capeside Cemetery, where he parks at Mitch's headstone. For anyone who cares, Mitchell Leary, loving husband and father, was born March 24th, 1955, and died October 24th, 2001.
Wasn't reading Aries to me, but okay, buddy.
What the stone doesn't specify is that what this loving husband and father loved most was ice cream. Dawson unloads to the grave about losing his virginity to Jen. Weird to tell even his father's remains, in my opinion. And also about meeting Oliver at the festival that Mitch entered Dawson's moving in, getting an agent off it, and having this offer to go to LA, which will let him use the plane ticket Mitch bought him, something Dawson thinks has a nice symmetry. He's doing so well. And then clip 26.
But the real thing I want to talk to you about is Joey Potter.
Yeah, he knows which Joey.
Yeah. How many other Joey? He's like, oh, you mean Joey Bag of Donuts in row four? What?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Whatever. Dawson goes on to Mitch's bones. Clip 27.
I mean, is it still okay after everything that's happened to believe that something perfect is possible?
I want to be with her. Love her.
Just fall into the ground without a sound. Crooked little smile.
Okay.
I'll talk to you later. Don't go anywhere.
All right. I'll allow it.
I mean, I didn't hate that line.
No, it's cute.
I say that to my grandparents, honestly.
Aw. The show makes James Vanderbeek so alive to me, also, that it took until this scene was over to think about his own grave. We miss him. And then Joey's parking the car in front of a supposed Five and Dime, the approximate size of a Walmart. You can see this in the visual aids. And walking in with her advance copy of the Worthington Literary Review. Ma'am, your father's been through enough. Don't make him read your bullshit on top of everything
else.
And that's the episode.
Hope you're looking for a recycling bin.
Let's close up by naming our MVP. I mean, I'm going to say Mike. He decided to peace out on all this bullshit, and I kind of don't blame him.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Dawson. Mm-hmm. He got it done.
Yeah.
If his father did not come back and throttle him, not claw his way above ground for that terrible graveside chat.
Yeah.
It's not happening, so he can continue on his way in life.
Indeed. Least valuable player.
I don't know.
Jen's parents. Fuck them.
I mean, yeah, always. But Alex, just a total misfire from start to finish, and she almost killed Pacey, and I'm glad to see the back of her.
Hell yeah.
Next time on Again With This, is Petite Joey Potter going to France instead of waiting tables? Will Dawson have to take pitch meetings at the gate? Barnstable Airport? Where's Danny's wife? What's up with Eric's parents? And can Graham send us out of season 5 on a cliffhanger? You should send that pun to the curb. While you're up, call us, 210-767-2237. You could talk about any of the shows we have covered, and or you can nominate which show we cover next. You can also send us a note or voice memo by email. That's hello@againwiththispodcast.com. All contact info and our visual aids for this and every other episode are on the website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm Pizza Box prop truther Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is published author Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is beautiful in the summer. Talk to you next time.
I am pleased.